Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, January the 26th. And a really shocking story first up today. A teenage girl has been treated in hospital after being stabbed in the leg at Kent's biggest secondary school. 13-year-old Daisy Andrews was with a group of friends at Homewood in Tenterden when a boy reportedly made comments about the colour of her hair before injuring her leg. Well, I've been speaking to Daisy's dad, Robin.
Straight off the bat, you just wonder, you know, what on earth has what has actually happened to her, and how serious it is. You hear the word stab and it drums up all connotations in your mind. But first and foremost, was she okay?
How is Daisy now? Can you tell us about her injuries and how she is?
Yeah, so they've glued the injuries back together. There's a pair of puncture wounds on the back of her calf, which are about 10 mil deep, she was told. She's had them glued back together. She's limping around. She's all right, but trying to put a brave face on it, but you know, doesn't want to go back to school because of what happened at the moment. So
I mean, obviously the wounds thankfully will heal, but it's the mental side of it, isn't it, for that to happen. Was it in a classroom? Was it outside? You know where it happened?
It was outside at break time, and it happened, you know, when she was with a group of friends, and the individual who attacked her came up to her and made a comment about the colour of her hair, because she's got red hair, how he didn't like that. And Daisy sort of, you know, told him where to go, and then he came back out with this half pair of scissors and said, "I'm what you say, because I've got this shank here, you know." And then before she knew it, he'd come up behind her and stuck it into her leg twice.
Obviously, Daisy was with her friends at the time. What did they do?
Well, Daisy didn't sort of register it at first. It was her friends that sort of noticed the blood pouring down the back of her leg. I've got the photographs here of what it looked like. She was stood on a small parapet wall. So there was quite a large amount of, it wasn't a small cut or anything, because it's quite a large amount of blood. And her shoe is full up of it. You know, we've had to get rid of those because you can't wash it out. So their friends just sort of picked up on it and shouted that, you know, you're profusely bleeding from the back of your leg. And off she went to the school nurse and so on from there.
Obviously, as you say, you contacted the police straight away. What's the latest as far as they're concerned and what the school are doing?
Police were very, very good. I contacted them and they were very helpful, obviously very concerned that it was a child-on-child incident and involving a what looks like almost a premeditated weapon, I suppose, of something. So they were very concerned, very, very good. We're just waiting for an officer to be assigned to it now.
And was Daisy off school today, presumably? Did she stay at home today?
Yeah, she's off because she's limping around. Because of the damage, and it's gone directly into a main supporting muscle of the back of her calf. It's quite sore, and the bruising's coming out. And obviously, she's quite fearful. I mean, this was an unprovoked attack on her because of the colour of her hair. You know, and I think in the back of her mind now, next time someone, you know, makes a remark like that, is that what she's to expect, you know, which is not on, you know.
What are you wanting to happen, Robin?
Well, I think, you know, Daisy would like to return to school. She does enjoy school, but she can't be there with the other individual. That's the end of it, really. If you're going to do something like that and in your head, you think that's okay, then you can't be within that environment, you know, for whatever reason. But she won't be going back to the school if the perpetrator is still there.
The school say the other pupils' actions were clearly unacceptable and they're carrying out inquiries before taking any disciplinary action. Police are also investigating.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you today. An Margate man is starting life in prison for murdering his girlfriend. Thomas Allen stabbed 37-year-old Samantha Murphy in the leg with a kitchen knife after trouble broke out at a neighbour's home in Elfrida Close last July. The 38-year-old has been told he'll serve a minimum of 27 years behind bars. Paul Hooper is our reporter at Maidstone Crown Court and covered the case.
I have covered many murder trials in my career, but I shall remember this for a long while. Not particularly because of the nature of the brutal stabbing of a mother of three as she hid behind a door with a glass panel, shocking though it was. It was the way in which her killer and lover, Tom Allen, remained indifferent as the jury delivered its guilty verdict. But as soon as the prosecutor began telling of an earlier case of a much more minor assault, Allen suddenly unleashed a fury of vile words aimed at everyone, including his lawyers, the pathologists, the bench. He then began making threats that he would get his revenge no matter how many years in prison he would receive. Well, that hearing on Wednesday was adjourned, no doubt, because the judge hoped that Allen would calm down. And today, the judge gave him a warning to remain calm as they delivered the sentence. But after Allen listened to the heartbreaking words of his victim's sister, when he lost his patience again, he lashed out. He told the judge not to show him any mercy and not to reduce any sentence. It was a bizarre spectacle, as his barrister was attempting to mitigate before sentence. Allen let out a volley of pleas for no reduction, no mercy. As one observer commented after the verdict, if anyone on the jury had any doubts about the guilty verdict, well, they haven't now. Allen, who seemed to be able to turn on and off the waterworks at will during the trial, will now have to serve 27 years before he can be considered for release. And the sad fact is that their children will be deprived of both their parents' love and care, all because of his jealousy and rage.
A man's body has been found following a fire that ripped through a house near Folkestone. Police say the blaze in Sunnyside Road in Sandgate is not being treated as suspicious. They confirmed a man in his 70s was found dead inside. It's not known yet how the fire started. A man charged over the deaths of 39 people found in the back of a lorry near the Dartford Crossing was due in court today. The group from Vietnam were discovered in the vehicle at an industrial estate in Essex in 2019. A 49-year-old who was detained by police in Romania last summer is accused of manslaughter and conspiracy to assist unlawful immigration. One final one from court, and a nurse from Margate who injured four people by driving into oncoming traffic on her way home from a shift has avoided losing her licence because of her valuable work. Coral Blackwell crashed into a minivan on the A28 Canterbury Road near Birchington last June. A court heard she wasn't speeding, and it's unclear why she didn't turn when the road bent suddenly to the left. The 55-year-old has been fined more than £300.
Kent Online reports.
NatWest is the latest bank to announce its closing branches in Kent. Three are going in May, the ones in Maidstone, Sheerness and Cranbrook. They're among 23 that'll be shutting across the country. Last week, Lloyds Banking Group made a similar move because customers are using online services instead. NHS physios are out on strike today, affecting services at Kent's busiest hospital. Staff in Medway are among thousands walking out, with more industrial action planned for next month. Karen Middleton is from the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy and has been speaking in a video the union has shared on socials.
Look, I know how hard it is for physiotherapists to have taken the decision to take strike action. This is something that's never been done before in the lifetime of this profession around pay, and it's a very serious moment in time for our profession. I've been out on visits, I've seen how hard the workforce is working in the NHS under extreme pressure. I've met physiotherapists who are visiting food banks because they cannot cope with the cost of living crisis at the moment. The impact of this is not just on the individual physiotherapist. The impact of not having a fair pay rise is on the whole workforce. We have got physiotherapists leaving because they cannot afford to stay in the profession. That means it's putting greater pressure on those physios that remain. It means that the level of service, the quality of service that can be delivered to patients is getting worse and worse and worse. And so even more physiotherapists are leaving because they just can't do what they've been trained to do and know is the right thing to do. So it's really important that this government comes back to the table with a better deal, a better offer for us to take to our members. This situation cannot go on. We're in a crisis situation, not only in terms of the physiotherapy workforce, not only in the service that's being delivered to patients, but in terms of the whole NHS.
Well, bosses at Medway Maritime Hospital say non-critical physio services won't be running, which could delay some patients being discharged. Our reporter John has been to the picket line in Gillingham and spoke to physio Darren Freeman.
So we're members of the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy. So that's the union representing the physiotherapists across the NHS. We're here at the moment because we feel that the current pay rise that we've been awarded by the government is not sufficient to be able to allow our staff to combat the cost of living crisis at the moment across the country. At the moment we've been given an award of £1,400 and we just feel that's not sufficient with everything that's going up. And at the moment with the cost of living, our increase is less than half of inflation. The problem with this is that the pay award has meant that we haven't been able to retain and recruit staff sufficiently, and without sufficient staffing levels, we haven't been able to provide the best patient care that we can. So what we really need is the government to be able to give us this, a decent pay award, to be able to retain and recruit staff a lot better and provide the patient care that we all want to provide. We don't want to be out here today, but we feel with the government's award at the moment, we have no choice with that.
The government's reportedly considering banning the sale and possession of laughing gas in a bid to tackle antisocial behaviour. You might well have seen the empty canisters on streets or in parks near to where you live. It's currently illegal to knowingly supply nitrous oxide for recreational use, but politicians in Kent have frequently called for rules to be tightened. And in some more health news, a young woman from Medway who ignored her own cancer symptoms for months is urging others not to make the same mistake. 24-year-old Chloe Etheridge was suffering from bloating and struggled to eat, but only went to A&E when things got really bad last April. A scan revealed two tumours on her ovaries. She's since had surgery and is expected to make a full recovery.
Kent Online reports.
A Medway woman says she's had to fork out hundreds of pounds after police wrongly seized her horse after misreading a microchip. The pony was taken to a secure location by officers after escaping from a field in Gillingham. Paige Wells was told its chip was blank. She later managed to confirm the animal was hers, but had to pay £500 to get it back. It's been suggested plans for more than 150 flats, shops and offices in the middle of Gravesend are given the go-ahead. Developers want to build on the Lord Street car park near the junction with Parrock Street. There have been concerns about a lack of parking, with just 51 spaces for cars being allocated. It'll be discussed by the council next week. An event is going to be held at Rochester Cathedral later to mark Holocaust Memorial Day. Communities will be coming together to pay tribute to those who were killed and persecuted. There'll also be an exhibition of artwork created by schools, which will be on display until next Sunday. Now, the Kent Online podcast has been told swimming pools could be forced to close if they don't get more help from government to pay energy bills. Swim England has warned more than 100 pools could shut or reduce the services they provide by the summer. The sector hasn't been included in the highest levels of support for the most energy-intensive industries. Well, I've been speaking to Ivan Horsfall-Turner, who's the chief exec of Freedom Leisure, which runs the Stour Centre in Ashford.
Yeah, really, really difficult. Very, very challenging. In public leisure facilities, particularly those with swimming pools, we're very, very heavy, very intensive users of energy. And our energy bills have gone up to an eye-watering level. Our annual bill used to be about £8 million per year. And the current position with the government support in place is that's well in excess of £20 million. So a huge increase that as a not-for-profit leisure trust, it's really difficult to be able to absorb that extra £1 million per month expenditure across all of our sites.
That is an absolutely huge increase. I must admit, I didn't expect it to be quite as much as that. How are you coping then with, are you having to increase the amount it costs for people to come and use your facilities? I mean, how are you trying to balance the books?
Yeah, really, really, really challenging, as I said. I mean, a whole range of things. So obviously, we've sadly had to increase prices to customers quite considerably, which is difficult because we know that all customers are quite hard pressed at the moment with the cost of living increases. We've had to take a whole range of measures to reduce the amount of utilities we use. And so that's kind of adjusting temperatures, adjusting set points, sort of turning down lighting, turning down heating, et cetera, et cetera. We've had to take some tough decisions around staffing. that we're able to do. But the reality is that that increase, which is about a sort of 300% increase in our utilities bills, we can't absorb. We can't actually make enough operational changes to cover that cost. And so we've had to talk with each and every one of our 25 local authority partners across the country and look to them as to see what support they can provide. And that's not easy for local authorities as well, I know, in that they're all fairly sort of fairly challenged as well.
You mentioned there about having to raise prices for customers. How has that gone down? Are people still coming along to support you, or have you seen a drop off in the number of people using facilities? Because as you say, this is impacting everybody at the moment.
Yeah, it's very difficult to know exactly whether there's a correlation between the price increases and customer throughput. Customer throughput is just about holding up, but it's just about holding up at the point in the year when we'd expect to be absolutely booming. Obviously, January for the leisure and fitness industry is traditionally our busiest month. So it's holding up, but not moving forward. And I think probably across the next few months, it'd be quite telling in terms of people making their own decisions on their own sort of discretionary expenditure and whether or not they can manage to prioritise coming to health and leisure facilities. We obviously hope they do, and I'd make the point that it's the right thing from a physical and mental health and wellbeing, but it's still difficult decisions for individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know for an awful lot of people, myself included, I must admit that the gym membership is often the first thing to go, isn't it? Because you think, right, what can I not have to spend out on? And perhaps that's one of the easier ones for some people to say, okay, well, I'll cut that cost. But I mean, things like that must be giving you sleepless nights, I would have thought.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it's been a very, very difficult period of time. I think probably the current cause of lack of sleep is that in the most recent announcements from the government in terms of the support they're going to give beyond April, we were hoping that they would increase the support to us. What they've actually done is not identified public sector leisure within the sort of the band that they call the energy and trade intensive industries that get further additional support. They've left us in the grouping of all businesses that are going to get some support. That level of support is really not enough. And so we're very much campaigning for being reallocated, redesignated within the energy intensive industries, because we absolutely are, and getting a further level of support.
Kent Online News.
A man's appeared in court and admitted stealing toys from a warehouse in Folkestone and then selling them on eBay. Dean Johnson worked for manufacturer Big Jigs and made more than £8,000 from the thefts over a 15-month period. The 36-year-old, who now lives in Smallfield in Surrey, will be sentenced at Crown Court at a later date. Shoppers have criticised an Asda store near Dartford for regularly running out of basics like milk, eggs and bread. Some customers say they're ditching the supermarket in Greenhithe in favour of Lidl or Morrison's in Gravesend. Asda say they're disappointed to hear the negative comments and are urging people to come to them directly with any concerns. Meantime, Medway is getting its first Waitrose. The food hall is set to open at Dobby's in Courtney Road near Gillingham Business Park this spring. It comes after Dobby's resident grocery supplier Sainsbury's pulled out of supply deals. Yet another cafe in Kent has announced its closing because of the cost of living crisis. We heard in the podcast yesterday actually how the food and drink industry was facing a potential crisis. Well, Bobby's Bakehouse on Folkestone Harbour has been struggling to make a profit. It'll be shutting for good on Monday, and the owners have thanked everyone who's supported them. Meantime, almost £50,000 has been given to 14 food banks in Kent as they try to cope with increasing demand. Facilities in Canterbury, Whitstable, Folkestone, Medway, Margate and Faversham were among those to benefit. Some food banks are spending around £1,000 a week to be able to give supplies to those most in need. Speaking of helping those in need, and a Kent woman is making final preparations before setting off on an epic charity trip to Uganda. Kat Smith from New Ash Green has converted a Land Rover into an off-road motorhome and plans to spend up to 9 months away from home. Her destination is an orphanage called Little Angels. She says the facilities there were really shocking. Well, let's hear what Kat has had to say.
I've always been interested in Land Rovers, but a year ago, just over, I was diagnosed with diabetes and it just broke my world. You can imagine. I mean, I'm a Land Rover enthusiast. I travel all over the world. And like I say, a year ago, I walked into the doctors with a few problems and gets diagnosed with diabetes. So my travel plans, although I'd already intended to travel, had just taken a tenfold change. You know, I'm going to beat this. I'm going to do this. And that's when I really decided to do over Africa, basically. I've done trips before. I did 11 years ago, I rode a quad bike to Timbuktu. My grandmother died and it was more a sort of memorial trip for her, but it became a big charity event and it was in all the newspapers, it was on the news. And basically what I did was we raised money for Macmillan Nurses and the hospice that supported her. And I drove a quad bike about, 12,000 miles from southern Spain all the way into Mali in South Africa. We went across the landmines. I mean, it was a mammoth trip. And we raised money. But I was always grated with me a little bit that the money I raised actually went into Europe. So although I did the trip, and like I say, there was points we thought we were actually going to die. We had no backup. It was just myself and a female friend on two quad bikes. We went there and we went back. We planted trees for the Africans. That was part of the charity as well. People paid for trees to be planted, which then grew. And hopefully the fruit for them would feed the locals. So that was all part of it. But that was the only thing we did for Africa. I was aware that all the money raised went to Macmillan in the UK and the hospices. So on view of that, I always intended, maybe not 11 years later, but to do something for Africa itself. And that's when I decided, having planning a trip to South Africa, that I not stumbled, went out of my way to start looking at orphanages and found this unsponsored orphanage called the Little Angels in Uganda. Really bad. They're cooker. They don't have cooking facilities. They cook on an open fire on the floor. They have bunk beds that they have seven or eight in per bunk bed. And they're not bunk beds by our standards. They're slats of wood. They don't have mattresses. They can't afford education. The school is just like a rubble with a blackboard. They don't have any pens or papers. Most of it's done on a blackboard, chalk on boards on the pavement. You know, so it really sort of drew on my heartstrings, to be honest. And having spent many of my younger years fostering children and working with young offenders, you know, there's disadvantage and disadvantage. This was something kind of scale I'd never seen. And fellow overlanders were saying, you know, we don't really want to speak about it because we're still trying to get to terms with it because it's that bad. So I made it my point to find out how bad and to put it out there. And I thought, look, I'm going down to Africa. I'd love to volunteer with them, which I'm going to do. I'm a mechanic by trade. I've lived in backwards and forwards to Spain many years. I do building and welding. And I thought, well, on top of that, I'm a teacher. I'm a qualified teacher. I was a teacher of technology. So I thought, well, there's got to be something I can do down there, you know, even if it's digging holes. So that was how it came around. The Land Rover I built myself, purpose-built for this trip. Myself and a female friend are going. So important to us was a shower, and it's never been done in a Land Rover before, ever. The Land Rover's about to appear in Land Rover Owners magazine because it is a one-off. You know, nobody has ever been able to achieve putting a hot and cold running water shower in a Land Rover. I made it my mission, ripped it apart, welded, cut, shut, and made it happen. So the Land Rover really is designed around our needs, which were quite important as overlanders. You know, I don't want to smell. Maybe, you know, different trips, different times, men in particular wouldn't be top of the list, but for us it would. So the result of that is I've designed a Land Rover that's a one-off. I've decided to do this trip despite the fact of the diabetes. I'm just going to manage it. I managed to get myself down from 95 kilos a year ago to 63 as I'm sitting here today. I've gone from a 16 to a size 8, and I've managed to get myself off of medication against all odds. And I'm doing this trip. I mean, I'm going to take medication with me. I'd be dumb not to, but it's happening.
Truly inspirational there. Kat is fundraising before setting off and is also hoping to volunteer and help teach the children. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. You can also get the very latest details of the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. And to sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.